Today's share is Masech Menachos Taf Lamed Beis. We will begin on Taf Lamed Aleph on the Beis, four lines from the bottom. Amar Rav Chelva, Kazina L'Rav Huna. Rav Chelva said, I saw Rav Huna, the Karach Lei Me'echot Kalaf Ishma. That when he would roll the mezuzah, he would roll it from the word Echad towards the word Shema. In other words, what he would do is he would be rolling the mezuzah from left to right. And as Tosfos points out, it's not to say necessarily that the last word of the first line is the word Echad. Actually, Tosfos says that the minig is that the last word of the first line is not Echad. The point of the Gemara, says Tosfos, is to teach us that the mezuzah was rolled from left to right. Furthermore, Vayis Parshas says too much. The way we know that the parsha of the mezuzah has on it two parshas, Shema v'ahavta being the first parsha. The second parsha is v'hoyim shemaya, and what the way it was written was that it should be written stumas. So, as Tosfos explains it, as the Rishonim explain, the proper way that it should be considered stumas, according to all opinions, is that the end of the first parasha, the end of a hafta, should end in the middle of a line. Then there should be a space for writing nine letters corresponding to the word lemishpat chaysechem, and then the next parasha of a hayim shemai should be written. Because actually, as the mifarshim bring down, we know that in the Torah there are many different parashas. There are parashas stumos and parashas psuchos. The Rambam explains that a parasha psucha is in two ways. If the previous parasha ends in the middle of a line, then the rest of the line is left open, and then you begin the next parasha at the beginning of the second line. But continues the Rambam to say that that is only, as we said a moment ago, if there's room to write nine letters at the remainder of the line. Continues the Rambam, if there aren't that much space from the end of the parasha to the end of the line, then you skip a line, and the next parasha, the next one, which is a parasha psucha, begins on the third line. That means you'll have the remainder of the first line, an empty second line, and then the third line, at the beginning of the line, that's when the parasha psucha begins. According to the Rambam, a parasha stuma is if the first parasha ends in the middle of a line, leave the space for nine letters, and then begin writing the next parasha at the end of that line. If, says the Rambam, there isn't that much space, that means there isn't enough room to leave the space for nine letters and begin the new parasha at the end of that line. So what the Rambam says is, leave whatever is left over open on that first line, and then begin the next parasha from the beginning of the second line. If the first parasha ends at the end of the line, then leave over the space for nine letters at the beginning of the next line, and then after the space of nine letters, begin the next parasha. In other words, according to the Rambam, which is the psak that the Shulchan Aruch quotes, a parasha's psucha always begins at the beginning of a line, a parasha's stuma always begins in the middle of the line. The Rosh says there's a different way of differentiating between a parasha stuma and psucha. He doesn't say it depends if it begins at the beginning of the line or the middle of the line. Rather, the Rosh focuses on the space between the two parashas. If there's writing on the two sides of the empty space, then it's called a parasha stuma. If it's open until the end of the line, and you begin the next parasha, that's called the parasha Psucha. But the Rosh will agree that if you leave an empty line between the two parashas, then the next parasha will be considered a parasha Stuma. As I said, the Rambam paskin, the Shulchan Aruch paskin like the Rambam, and as we also said, if you'll end the parasha Vahafta at the end of one line, and you'll start parasha Vahashmaya at the end of that line, according to everyone, that will be considered the parasha Stuma. Furthermore, the Taisus asks a question. In the parasha Mezuzah, as we just said, there are only two parashas, Vahafta and Vahayim Shemaya. So ask Taisus, how does the Gemara use the words parashas Seho, which seems to be two parashas, when there's only one gap between the two parashas? Taisus gives an answer which is very ambiguous. Some explain what Taisus means is that it doesn't mean specifically this parasha. It means all the parashas in the Torah, that whenever we look at parashas, we know there are stumas and psuchas, and that's what the Gemara is referring to when it speaks about parashas. Another teretz that I saw that the Mefarshim suggest is that Taisus means, that the Gemara means to say, that the end of the parasha of Ahayim Shemaya should also be at the end of a line, in order that both parashas should be considered parashas stumas. Continues the Gemara. Meisvei asks on this Gemara. It says in a brayso, Amar Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Remeya hayukosvei am duchstakas kemendaf. Here the Gemara refers to the writing of the mezuzah on what type of a parchment should be written. And a word of introduction, which will be relevant for the later in the shiur as well. When we take the leather, we take the skin on which the animal's skin, it can be split into two. The way most Rishonim explain, and that's the way we're going to learn the Gemara, the outer half is called klaf, the inner half is called duchtus. In fact, furthermore, as we'll see later in the shiur, in the klaf and in the duftus, there's actually two parts. There's the outer part of the klaf, the part and the inner part of the klaf, and similarly by the duftus, there's the outer part of the duftus and the inner part of the duftus. Says the Gemara, Ramei would write the mezuzah on the duftus, and he would write it like a daf. Number pshatim and the rishonim, what does it mean to mend duftus? One pshat is that he wrote it like the columns of the Sefer Torah, where the columns of the Sefer Torah are long and narrow. Another pshat is that he wrote them, which is the minhag, one parasha below the other parasha, not alongside the parashias. And another pshat is that they weren't careful that the lines of the Sefer of the mezuzah should all end in the same place. At the margin, some lines were wider and some lines were narrower. Continues the Gemara. Va'isa, and space was left over. Va'isa revach, and space was left over. Memala v'revach memata. Space was left over on top and on bottom for the mezuzah. Interesting discussion in the Rishonim. Our Gemara is focused on the space that was left over on the top and on the bottom of the page on which the mezuzah was written. But the Gemara doesn't speak about space along the side. So it seems from all the Paiskim that certainly there was enough space left on the side, a halakha that we've learned and we will discuss again, the halakha of Mukhef Zil, that there has to be space left over on the side for writing the letter, and that the letter should, that there should be empty space along all sides of the letter. That there's no question about. What there is a discussion in the Paiskim about is there more than that space left or not? Some Rishonim take the opinion that certainly not more than that's the minimal amount of space should be left on the side. And the reason is because we know that in the back of the Sefer of the Mezuzah, we write the Shem Hashem Shakai Shin Dalet Yud, and the empty space between that we just spoke about, between Vahafta and Vahoyim Shemaya, and the Halak, and you're supposed to see that word Shakai. In fact, in my Sefer in Hilchos Mezuzah, I quote the opinion of many Paiskim that say that the mezuzah holder should be a clear mezuzah holder, or certainly it should be a clear place where that Shem Shakai could be visible. And therefore, if there's going to be a very large amount of space after the writing of the mezuzah that you're going to roll around the mezuzah, that Shem Shakai will not be visible. And therefore, because of that, the Paiskim suggest, the Rishonim Rei suggest, that unlike other Sfarim, there should be a very minimal margin by a mezuzah. It's interesting to note that the Shita Mekubetzis already discusses this question, and he says that even if there's going to be a wide margin along the side of the mezuzah, and it will cover up, and when you roll it up, it will cover up the Shem Shakai, it isn't of great concern, because you could just make a hole along that space, and that's where you'll write, and that's where you'll have be able to see the Shem Shakai, even though it's covered up because of the rolling of the mezuzah. Furthermore, he said, as we discussed earlier, what psuchis means, he would make the parash of the mezuzah psuchis. And I said to him, Rebbe, my tam, what is the reason that you did it this way, that you, why did you write a psuchis? In the Torah, aren't these parashas written stumis? Or matuli, hayavet smuchis min Torah. Which posh pshat in the Gemara means that, yes, when you're writing a Sefer Torah, there to have, the halacha is that you have to make these parashas stumis in the Torah. But here, we're not writing a Sefer Torah. And since we're not writing the Sefer Torah, that if they were next to each other, then there's understanding why it should be stumis. But here, in the Torah, they're not next to each other. Parshas Shema for Hafta is in Parshas Vaschanon. Parshas Vahayim Shemay is in Parshas Ekev. Therefore, since they're not written anyway, they're not next to each other, there is no purpose in making them psuchas and stumas. Vamrav Kananel Marav. Halakrav Shemim Elazar. Halakrafazak Shemim Elazar. My lot doesn't it mean that we follow the opinion of Shimon and Lazar regarding the halacha psuchis. So, Rav Psak here, that he says that the halacha should be psuchis, is different than the Gemara we began today, Rav Huna. Rav Huna was Rav's Talmud, and he said, and so ostensibly he must have followed the opinion of his Rebbe, and he said that the mezuzah should be made stumis. Says the Gemara, when Rav says here the halacha like of Shimon ben Lazar, it doesn't mean regarding the halacha of psuchis. Regarding that, then he, Paskins, and his Talmud Rav Huna reported it accurately that the mezuzah should be written stumis. Here he was talking about the space that Rav Shimon ben Lazar was referring to. He's referring to the revach, the kama revach, and indeed how much space should be left on top and the bottom of the page of the mezuzah. Amar of Nashi by Yaakov. Ramali Umar Shmuel Rav Yaakov Kamali Atbadasifri. The siphon used to have a clip. It looked very much like a clothespin, because we know, as we've been discussing, they used to write the Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs on parchment, and in order that the parchment should not roll up, and therefore by rolling up it'd be complicated to be able to write, they had these clips to keep them flat. And the depth that you need for those clips, that's the amount of space that should be left on the top and the bottom of the page. Amar Abaye Rav Yosef, Va'at Loitzisbra, do you not agree, the Ki Amar Rav, that when Rav said the halacha of Shimon ben Elazar, he was referring to the halacha of the revach, of the amount of space that should be left on the bottom and the top of the page? For her, ask the Gemara. Rav is the man to Amar, that follows a minhaga. Rav is the man to Omar that always follows a minig. So the way the Mefarshim, the Marik, explains this Gemara as follows. If the minig, ha'olam, if the world's minig is to follow, is to write stumas, then we could say that Rav maybe disagrees with the minig ha'olam, with the way the world's custom is. But we know, says the Gemara, that Rav always paskins like the minig. Rav is a very big proponent of following what the minig ha'olam is. And the minig ha'olam is to follow stumas. And this is the Gemara that in fact teaches us how important it is to follow the minig. There's the famous words of the Pre-Chodesh, Sheminig Mevatel Machloikis. However, even though we're learning the importance of a minig, the Paiskim point out, the early Paiskim already point out, that we don't always follow a minig. There are a number of conditions that have to be met in order to follow a minig. One is that we only follow a minig when there's a basis in halacha for the minig. If there is no basis in halacha for a minig, we don't follow the minig. Others say, when the Gemara says here we follow a minig, it means that when there's a dispute, a machloikis, so then we can rely on the minig to tell us what to do. But just to rely on a minig without any basis, we can't. Others say that a minig should only be followed when the issue is an issue of a minig. Is only an issue of the Rabbanon. But if it's not of the Rabbanon, you can't just rely on Minhagim. There's an interesting vart, actually two varts, from the Kotzke. The Kotzke says, our Gemara is teaching us how important a minig is. Says the Kotzke, from where do we know that a minig is so important? Because he says, we all recall the Medrash, that when Moshe Rabbeinu came up to Shemayim to receive the Torah, the Malachim wanted to harm him because they were upset that he was taking the Torah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Moshe Rabbeinu look like Avram Avinu, and he said, isn't that the person by whom you ate? Because we all remember the parashah in the Torah, in Parashas Vayera, that the Malachim ate by Avram Avinu. So the Mefarshim go on, says the Kotzker, we know that Malachim don't eat. So what's pshat that Malachim ate by Avram Avinu? The answer is, the reason that Malachim ate is because, as the Gemara says, La'olam al-yishana adam min aminig. And therefore, even Malachim don't eat, since it was the minig amongst people to eat, they ate as well. So we see from here, says the Kotzker, that the way we were able to receive the Torah was because of a minig. That's how the Malachim showed respect to Avram Avinu, who they ate by. And they only ate by him because of a minig. The power, so since all of our Torah was given because of a minig, that's why minig is so strong. In fact, they once asked the Kotzker, there are people on Pesach who have the minig not to eat the brachos, not to eat any matzah products that come in contact with liquid, with water. And they asked him, where is this minig, what is the source from this minig? And he said, our Gemara. Because our Gemara says that we should always follow a minig. Says the Gemara, where do we see the power of a minig? Don Rabba Amarav Kahana Amarav. And Yov El Yov. We all know there's a parish in the Torah, parish of Chalitza. That Rachman al Tzlan, someone passes away without any children, the husband's brothers should do Yibam, they should marry the widow. And if they don't want to marry the widow, what they should do is, if they don't want to marry the widow, they should do chalitza. Chalitza involves the shoe, a shoe being put on the foot of the man, and the woman taking off that shoe. Now, midaraisa, the Torah says, the chaltza menaloi, she take off the shoe. The Torah doesn't distinguish what type of shoe. But as the Gemara Masech, the Yevamos, and now Gemara, discusses there are two types of shoe. There's a minnow and a sandal. And not like we would think. The sandal is more of a firm shoe. The minnow is a soft shoe. The Rishonim point out the difference between a minnow and a sandal. There are really two specific differences. A sandal was made out of hard leather. A minnow was made out of soft leather. Furthermore, a minnow was made out of pieces of leather. A sandal was made out of one piece of leather. And therefore, the minhag was that they would do chalitza with a sandal. Because if they did it with a minnow, which, as we just said, was made out of soft leather, then sometimes they don't have the entire shoe firmly on the foot. It could be even torn, the shoe, but since it's soft, it wouldn't be noticeable. It could still remain on the foot. Or, given the other explanation we gave, given that the minnow was made out of pieces, a piece of the shoe could be missing, and it would make it disqualified for not being considered a shoe, but yet it would not be kosher for chalitza. Says Rav Kahana, in Yovel Yov Yom Chalts Minnow, if El Yov will come and reestablish the minig that we should only use a minnow for chalitza, Shoymanoi, we listen to him. But if even though we don't use a minnow, Ein Chalts with a sandal, since the minig is to use a sandal, if El Yov will tell us not to use a sandal, Ein Shoymanoi, we should not listen to what he says. Why? Shekvar Nogu on the sandal, everybody has a minig to use the sandal, and we should always follow a minig. Rabbi Yosef Kahana Amar Rav, in Yov El Yov V'Yomer, Ein Chaytzum Minol. If El Yov will come and say we shouldn't use a minol, Shalmin Loi, we should listen to what he says. Ein Chaytzum B'Sandol, but if we don't, but he says not to use a sandal, Ein Shalmin Loi, we shouldn't listen to what El Yov says. Shekfad Nogu Am B'Sandol, everybody's used to using the sandal, that is the minig, and we should always follow a minig. From here we see the power of a minig. Interesting to point out that I saw from the Satmar Rebbe that he asked, why is the Gemara focused on Eliyahu HaNavi being the person to come to tell us this? Why is the Gemara speaking in terms of Eliyahu HaNavi? Says the Satmar Rebbe that what the Gemara is teaching us is we know that certainly everybody accepts the word of Eliyahu HaNavi. Certainly Eliyahu HaNavi would never say anything but what is absolutely correct. And therefore, that the Gemara is teaching us that even if it's somebody as accepted in the community as Eliyahu HaNavi, where there is no question about his greatness, still the minig is greater than what Eliyahu HaNavi says. But it's interesting to note that I saw that Ramosha says the same thing. Ramosha, interesting issue, nothing to do with our sugya. Ramosha was asked a shaila. It's a Nigros Moshe Chelik Yerideya Chelik Gimel Simen Kuf Nun Hey. He was asked a question by a Kohen if he is allowed to become a doctor. Because we know in the medical school, becoming a doctor, they have to work with bodies. And there's a question of Tumah. And Rav Moshe in that Tshuva says that a Kohen should not become a doctor. And he says the same thing. And even if you'll tell me that there were people that Paskin, great people that Paskin, that they should, you're allowed to become a doctor. So he says, that's the point of our Gemara. Just like our Gemara says, that even if it's somebody as great as Eliyahu HaNavi, we don't listen to what he has to say. The same thing, it doesn't make a difference who will say that a Kohen may become a doctor. We don't listen to what that person has to say. Bamina, and ask the Gemara, my Benayu. It seems both versions of what was being said here is that a sandal should be used for the chalitza. Answers the Gemara, minnow l'chatchil ik benayu. The question was, could somebody use a minnow bezman hazeh? Rava, who says that we would listen to Eliyahu if he told us that we could use a minnow, seems to be saying that only if Eliyahu were to tell us that we could use a minnow, we would be allowed to use the minnow. Until that, we should not use a minnow. Reb Yosef says that we would listen to Eliyahu if we would not allow the use of a minnow. It seems to be saying that until that time, we're allowed to use a minnow. And in fact, Tosfos says that even though throughout Shas we have halacha, Rava v'Reb Yosef, halacha k'Rava, here we follow the opinion of Reb Yosef, and we're allowed to use a minnow. Why? So Tosfos says two reasons. One reason is because we really don't know Bizman Hazeh, what is the difference between a minnow and a sandal. And also says Tosfos that even though normally when we have machlokes, Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, we follow the opinion of Rabbi, that's only when they're saying their own opinion. Here they're repeating the opinion of others, so that rule doesn't apply. So we see that when Rav said that we should use stumas, and that's the minhag ha'olam, obviously that's how he paskin. So how could Rav say that looks like a Shimon ben Elazar? Says the Gemara, it must be that when Rav said that the looks like a Shimon ben Elazar, he was referring to the Rebbe, to the empty space on the top and the bottom of the mezuzah. Shema mina. Continues the Gemara, Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar, mitzvah. The mitzvah is to make the mezuzah out of stumas. The avidna psuchas, but the halacha is, if somebody made them psuchas, shapadam. My psuch, the kamar of Shimon ben Elazar. What does it mean when Shimon ben Elazar said that we can make it psuchas? He didn't mean that specifically she made psuchas. What he meant was, a psuchas, you can make a psuchas and it'll be fine. But that's not the l'chatchil of the gemitzvah. Lema Messiah, and the Gemara wants to bring a riot to this approach. Kiyotzbo. We're going to learn this halacha later in our perek. The Gemara there speaks about that one may not make the tefillin shoyad, may not turn the tefillin shol roish, may not take the tefillin shol yad. No, I'm sorry. One may not take the tefillin shol roish and make them into the tefillin shol yad, but one may make the tefillin shol yad into the tefillin shol roish. Because the tefillin shol roish are considered more kadosh. And there are three reasons why the tefillin shol roish are considered more kadosh. One is because we know that on the tefillin there is the shem shakai, shin dalajud, and the shin is on the tefillin shol roish. On the boxes, we have the shin on the two sides of the boxes. The dalad we have on the back of the box, the knot on the back of the back of the back of the tefillin shol roish. And we also have the tefillin, we also have the yud on the tefillin shel yad by the knot. So since this has the shin and the dalad, and this only has the yud, so that's why the tefillin shel roish are considered more kadosh. That's one explanation. Another explanation is because the tefillin shel roish are visible to everyone, whereas the tefillin shel yad are covered. And something that's more visible has more kedusha, as the pasuk says, and we're going to speak about this pasuk. Ra'ah kol am aretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha v'yaru mimecha. That's why the tefillin shel roish are considered more kadosh. Another explanation is because the tefillin shel roish is four batim, it's four boxes. The tefillin shel yad is only two boxes. Because they have only two boxes and they have four boxes, that's why they're considered more kadosh. The Braisa continues saying, what would be the halacha of Sefer Torah Shabbalah? If the Sefer Torah gets ruined, the tefillin Shabbalah, or the tefillin get ruined, the halacha is, ein oisim mehem mezuzah. One should not make from them a mezuzah. Lefi, again with the same reason, she'ein maridin mekedusha chamura mekedusha kala. We can't go from a kedusha chamura kedusha kala. And now the Rishonim have a very big machlokes. How would it even be possible to make tefillin from a Sefer Torah a mezuzah? As we said earlier in our shir, Parshas Shema is a Parshas Voschanon. Parshas V'Hoyim Shema is a Parshas Eker. So how can you turn that into a mezuzah? So Rashi seems to learn in Masechta Shabbos that there is no concern of having one parasha. There is no concern of having all those extra parashas in the mezuzah. And we would have one big mezuzah starting a parasha, the Schanam, and going until Parashas Ekev. Tosfos and Melch Rishonim disagree with Rashi. They say that those extraneous parashas do not belong in the mezuzah. And they say what would happen was that they would cut the parashas in between and sew them together. The issue with that is that we're going to learn in the next daf that a mezuzah should not be made out of two columns, out of two dafim. And here we're saying that they would be sewn together, to which many Rishonim respond. The Gemara there means that you shouldn't have two separate pieces of cloth, one for the Parsha Shema Vahafta and the other for Vahim Shemaya. But if they're sewn together, that would be fine. But another pshat that's given is that they should take, well, what the Gemara means here is that let's say the Parsha Shema is on the top of a page, and then you would write for Hoyim Shemaya on the bottom of the page, or vice versa, you would have the Parshas Vahoyim Shemaya on the bottom of the page, and the Parsha Shema would be on the top of the page. However, the problem with that approach is, as we have already mentioned in our previous shiurim, that by a mezuzah, there's a din of kesidron, that the mezuzah has to be written in the proper order. So how could it be that we should have the Parsha Vahoyim Shemaya on the bottom of the page? And what the Gemara here means is that we should write the Parsha Shema on the top of the page. Isn't there a problem with Shloike Sidron? To which many Mefarshim respond that Tosfos will be of the opinion that Shloike Sidron is only within the Parshas itself. But if you write Parsha Shema in the right Seder, and you write Parsha Vayom Shemaya in the right Seder, and the only issue here is that one Parsha was written before the other Parsha, that isn't a concern. The Brisk Rav says different pshat in Tosfos. He explains that Tosfos will be of opinion that Kesidra means that on the page you have to have Shema V'Hafta before you have V'Hoyim Shemaya, because that's how they appear in the Torah, just in Parshas V'Scharon and that in Parshas Ekev. But it has nothing to do with the actual writing. But again, back to our Gemara. And Gemara says that the only reason why we can't turn a Sefer Torah into a mezuzah, you can't turn a Sefer Torah into a mezuzah, because you have a problem, Eimaridim Kedusha Chamru Kedusha Kala. Hamaridim, were we not to have this concern, Oysim, we would be allowed to do so. Ask the Gemara, but Mai, why would that be fine? Hachas Tumas, Vachas Psuchas, the Parsha in the Torah are stumais, and here the psuchis. It seems that it must be in the Torah the parashas are stumis, and the mezuzah the parashas are psuchis. Now, according to Rameya, according to Rameya, the parashas of the mezuzah are stumis, and that when Rameya says that he would make them open, it means that he's allowed to make them open, but not that he must make them open. Says the Gemara, it could be, well, the Rameya, as Rav Shimon Lozer holds, that they must be psuchas. And when he says that we would be able to, if there was no problem of Hayrada, it only means to insert a line, but not anything more, that you can make the parashas different, because he maybe indeed holds not that they can be psuchas, but they must be psuchas. Ask the Gemara, continues the Gemara, Hamaridin, if we didn't have the problem of Maridin, we would be allowed to make a Sefer Torah into mezuzah. And Tosfos points out, the fact, even though the minhag is that the Tefillin Shel Yad, the Parshas are written four lines, but the Rosh, there's seven lines, but the mezuzah, there are 25 lines, Tosfos says that isn't such a strong concern that it should be usher to change it. The other Mefarshim also point out that what makes the Sefer Torah more chomer than the Tefillin, and the Tefillin more chomer than the Mezuzah. The Mezuzah, they say, is only by the house. The Tefillin is on the top of the head of a person, and the Sefer Torah is in the Aron Kodesh. And therefore, something that's kept in the Aron Kodesh should not be demoted and to be putting on just to the doorway. Ask the Gemara, again, it seems that we didn't have the problem of Hayrada. We could make a Sefer Torah or Tefillin into Mezuzah, but Tanya Locha Mash Mesinai, we discussed this earlier. Tefillin ala cloth, or Mezuzah ala dustus. We divide the leather, the outer half, as I said, is called the cloth, the inner half is called the dustus, the Tefillin is written on the cloth, and the Mezuzah is written on the dustus. Cloth, b'makom basur. As I said, when you split it and you have the cloth, you have the outer half, which is where the hair grows, and the inner half towards the flesh. When you write on the klaf, you should write in the makom basar. When you write in the duftus, you should write in the makom seir. Again, there's the part towards the inside of the animal, the part towards the outside of the animal, right towards the outside of the animal. So the question is, how could we even have a havamina that we should write one on the other? Isn't there a halakha here that they're written on different parts of the parchment? Answers the Gemara, that's only lemitzvah. Ask the Gemara of Atanya, but have we not learned in a brisa that shino, if somebody changes writing, deviates from the type of parchment that's possible? Answers the Gemara, that's mitzvah. Ask the Atanya, have we not learned another brisa, shino bein bezeh possible, that you made a deviation in either is possible? Answers the Gemara, edv tefillin. That brisa also is only referring to the tefillin. Vadik sivna klaf makom seir. If he wrote on the klaf, but instead of writing on the inner half of the klaf, he wrote on the outer half of the klaf. Vaha, and the other one is the sivna the stachus with makom basar. We wrote on the duftus, but instead of writing it on the duftus, even in the place of the meat, the halacha is that even though it's so close to the klaf, because that part of the duftus is touching the part of the klaf on which you should write, so you would think that the evidence is acceptable. That's why the Braisa teaches us, no, that the tefillin has to be written specifically on the klaf, but makom basar, anything else would not be good. Vibayis Ema, another way of explaining, this question of deviating on which the tefillin is written, on where the tefillin is written, the mezuzah is written, is a machloikas tanoimhi. The Tanya, one Braisa indeed says, shina b'zeh b'zeh, if somebody deviated both by the tefillin or the mezuzah, it's possible. Rav Acha, Machshim, Shem Rav Acha, Rav Chanina, Ramla Mishmei, Rav Yaakov, Rav Chanina. And that's why this Braisa that says that if not for the problem of Herodah, Mikidusha Chamur, Mikidusha Kala, we could change it, is following the opinion that it doesn't really, it's writing on what part of the cloth is not absolutely essential. Again, ask the Gemara Hamaridin, it seems that if we could go and change the Kedusha, we'd be allowed to. Ask the Gemara Babai Sirtin. The halacha is that a mezuzah requires sirtut, and a tefillin do not require sirtut. Now, why does a mezuzah require sirtut, and tefillin not require sirtut? So I saw a number of explanations. The simplest explanation is what we just explained. Since the tefillin is written on the cloth, the cloth is a much more delicate piece of leather, so making these lines would ruin that leather. The mezuzah is written on the duftus, which is tougher, and therefore it's not so much of a concern. Another explanation is that the tefillin, the halacha is the mezuzahs have to be checked twice every second year, 7 years. A tefillin, mi'ikur hadin, is only written checked once every 50 years. So the mezuzah is much more visible than the tefillin. And because it's much more visible, that's why it should be written nicer with sirtut. The Mefarshim go on to explain that the Rishonim already asked, isn't the halacha that whenever you write letters of the Torah, you have to make sirtut, and the tefillin are words of the Torah? So to which the Rishonim give a number of answers. One is it's only when you write three words. Tefillin theoretically can be written less than three words per line. Another answer is that only sirtut that's required is the sirtut on the top of the page. Whereas by mezuzah, every line requires sirtut. The Rekiv Ega, based on this Gemara, shows us that the halacha of sirtut is that you can't make sirtut after it's written. Because our Gemara is concerned that the tefillin don't have sirtut, and the mezuzah does have sirtut. But why can't the Gemara simply say that we'll make the sirtut later? The answer is, because we don't make sirtut after the writing, it has to be before the writing. But then, the Rishonim ask, that even though the halacha is that tefillin don't require sirtut, perhaps sirtut was written. So certainly we follow what we said earlier, that they don't make sirtut on the tefillin because the leather is delicate, so we understand that sirtut shouldn't be made. Another explanation, the Tosfos quotes the Yerushalmi, that says, If you're not obligated to do something, you shouldn't do it. And if tefillin are exempt from sirtut, one should not make sirtut on tefillin. The Bach gives a different answer. He says, sirtut that would be made for tefillin, even if sirtut is made for tefillin, they would not be valid for a mezuzah. Because the halacha is that you have to make it lishma. The lishma that you have to make it for mezuzah will not be valid for tefillin. It has to be made, in other words, as the Brisker Rav explains, the sirtut is not just the rule that you have to make the line straight. And how do you make the line straight? By making sirtut. Rather, explains the Brisker Rav, that sirtut is a question on the kedusha of the sefer. And the kedusha of the sefer is through the kedusha of the mezuzah is through the sirtut. So again, ask the Gemara. If we wouldn't have the problem of reading, we could make tefillin into mezuzah. But doesn't mezuzah mean sirtut? Dom Ram Yuni Bachelk Yom Rav Chaim Vagur Yom Rav Kol Mezuzah Sh'enim Surtet Es Psula Ram Yuni Bachelk Yom Rav Chaim Vagur Yom Rav Mezuzah Is Halach L'Mashi Mesinai. So how can we turn tefillin into mezuzah? And says the Gemara, Tanaihi. It's actually a Machloikis Tanon. The Tanya, Rami Yom Rav Rabbeinu Tefillin Mezuzah Nuchtava Shloim Niksav. When you write them, the cipher doesn't have to be looking at a piece, at a chumash, copying the words, and the Gemara will explain further. Vein tzricha sirtut. And therefore, this price is obviously following that opinion. However, says the Gemara, the Hilchasa, the halacha is, tefillin loy bay sirtut, tefillin don't require sirtut, and mezuzah bay sirtut. V'idi, furthermore, both tefillin and mezuzah's nechtovah shloy meneksav. You don't have to be, the cipher doesn't have to be looking into a chumash as he's writing them. My tama, what is the reason? Migras reason. Since everybody knows these parashas, the parashas of Shema, of the mezuzah, of the haftarah and Shemaya, the parashas of the tefillin, were well known, and since they were so well known, we don't have to worry about the cipher not writing them properly. He certainly knows them by heart. Whereas the Sefer Torah, obviously, the person writing the Sefer Torah doesn't know the entire Torah by heart. And since he doesn't know the entire Torah by heart, there the halacha will be that he has to write the Sefer Torah. And there he has to write the Sefer Torah minha from another Sefer. Interesting question that I saw that the Poskim discussed. Now that we said that the Sefer Torah has to be written from a Sefer, what would be the halacha regarding a Sefer Torah, the parsha, if you're writing the Sefer Torah and you're writing the parsha Shema and Vahoyah Shemaya, given that Al Gemara just told us that those parshas of the Torah are so well known that every Sefer knows them by heart, can we rely that that should be written? Can we rely that that can be written by Shalpeh? Or once the halacha is that a Sefer Torah has to be written Meneksav, every part of the Sefer has to be written Meneksav. Continues the Gemara. Aram Chaba, no chazito Rafuna. I saw Rafuna that Yosef appointed the Sefer Torah lay. He was sitting on a bed that had a Sefer Torah. The Kofel Kado and Ara, and before he sat down, he took a jug, he turned it upside down, Vanachala Sefer Torah, and he put on the Sefer Torah, Vahada Yosef Amit, and only then did he sit down on the bed. Why? Says the Gemara. Kesavir, he's of the opinion. Also, Leishiv, Agam Mitish Sefer Torah Munachala. You're not allowed to sit on a bed that has a Sefer Torah on it. Pligid Rav Bachana. The Rav Bachana, Rav Yochanan. Mutta Leishiv, Agam Mita Sefer Torah Munachala. One could sit on a bed that has a Sefer Torah on it. Vimloshach Adam Loimer. If somebody will ask you, Master of Elezer Shal Yoshev El Mita. There was a story where Elezer was sitting on a bed. Viniskish Sefer Torah Munachala. The Nishma of Yoshua Gabakarka, so we see you're not allowed to sit on the same bed with a Daimler Kimishi Kafish Nafish, and he act like he got bitten by a snake. Hasam Sefer Torah Gabakarka Hava. Interesting, La Halacha, the Poskim say, the Lechatchila wants you to not sit on a bench that has a Sefer Torah on it, or a Sefer on it, unless there's something to elevate the Sefer or the Sforum on. Another interesting question is, are you allowed to sit on top of a bench that has on it, that has the lowest, you know, a place to keep svarim? And actually, I saw that question discussed by many poskim, and it seems that if there's a space in between the Sfarim and the bench that you're sitting on. If there's a space between the bench and the Sfarim that you're sitting on, and it's not a place where it's a Sefer Torah, it's only other Sfarim, we could be perhaps more lenient. Continues the Gemara. Honor Yudam Shmuel, Kosfei Geris. If somebody wrote a mezuzah like a letter, that means he wasn't careful about chseiris, chseiris, extra words, or not careful about making certain psula. My tama, asik siva ksiva, sefer, we learn exer shara from the sefer. Machloikus, which sefer does it mean? Rashi says it means the sefer get. Tosfos says it doesn't mean the sefer get, it means the sefer soita. Baruch Yudam Shmuel, tol b'makel. If somebody put up the mezuzah b'makel, two primary pshatim to Rishonim, what does Tala B'makel mean? Some Rishonim say that it wasn't firmly on the doorpost. Other Rishonim say that it was that somebody had a pole, a makel, like a stick hanging down from the doorpost and from the top of the door, and that's where you put the mezuzah, not on the actual doorpost. Psula, my tama, b'sharechabin, and it has to be actually on the door. Tanyan hafik, Tala B'makel. He put it behind the door. Sakana ve'emba mitzvah. Machlaik is what pshat, why it's sakana. According to the pshat, because it's hanging, sakana, because you bang your head into that pole. According to the pshat, that it's not firmly on the door, it's sakana, because the mezuzah protects us, and this person will not be afforded that protection. However, says the Marsha Bay's Mumbas, how Isaac of the Kusayan came, they used to put it on that way because they were constantly traveling. Zeich lemitzvah. The Paiskim say the Shal Chuvus Chaltus Yaakov, however, does say, even though the Gemara is saying it has to be firmly on the door, doesn't necessarily have to be nails. It could be put on with glue, and that is also considered put firmly on the door. Interesting Shal in the Paiskim. We know the halacha is that one may not remove a mezuzah even if he's moving. What would be the halacha if somebody put on a mezuzah in a place that really isn't necessarily obligated in the mezuzah? Can he take it off? So Rav Shevet HaLevi, based on this Gemara, says, we see that you can. Because what happened in this Gemara is that they were constantly moving, and we see that they were allowed to take the mezuzah. But the Tzofnas Paneich disagrees. He says it's only here, where it was never firm in the first place, but where it was put on properly in the first place, even if it's perhaps not obligated, one shouldn't remove it. The mezuzah should be put in the doorway. Pshita, asked the Gemara, isn't it obvious to be Sharech Amar Rachmana? Answers the Gemara. Sakatat Kamina, however, Amar Rava, Mitzvah Nia, the Tefak Asamach Shusharavim, it should be put in the first Tefak of the doorway. Maybe Kamad Amarach Mali, and maybe you should put it on the outside of the doorway, which is even closer to where you enter the house. Kamash Malon, it has to be put in within the doorway, not in front of the doorway in any way.